keep their coffee black.
Coffee stay black, just like me. Don't need no sugar, don't need no cream. Coffee stay black, just like me.
Yo, what up, family? Hope y'all got your coffee. You know what I mean? I hope you had your first sip already. I'm sipping on this Haitian right now. That's John. Crazy. I've been dialing it in for a minute. Okay, I don't want to be too long today, so I just wanted to kind of tap on this. I wrote a blog post, which is kind of on MLK coffee shops and fanny packs, ironically. So our coffee company just released these fanny packs. And I just want to kind of to break down one of the phrases that's on the back of it. It says, society loves single origin coffee, but not single origin people. And Young Thurgood, that's right. Appreciate you. So I kind of wanted to break down what I meant by that comment and just kind of offer some things I've been rolling around on. My son didn't get any sleep last night, so I've had plenty of time to kind of think about what I wanted to say today on MLK Day. And it really, quote, yo, the Haitian coffee go crazy, bro. This is my favorite coffee right now. You got to grind coarse, I'm finding, at least with the Baptiste. Like, it's coarser than I would normally grind because I've been going more in the direction of grinding fine. But this coffee really sings, man, at a coarser grind. I've been doing like a 15-to-1 ratio, 16-to-1. Sweet, delicious. Not super sweet, but just like this really crazy hibiscus tea, purple, nutty, floral. It's crazy. It's crazy. But back to the subject at hand. So I just wanted to talk about some of my thoughts on MLK. I wanted to read a quote specifically that MLK said that I think is kind of at the heart of what I mean when I say society loves single origin coffee, but not single origin people. So King said this at his Nobel Peace Prize lecture, December 11th, 1964. So you can, you know, fact check me or whatever. But he said, this problem of poverty is not only seen in the class division between the highly developed industrial nations and the so-called underdeveloped nations. It's seen in the great economic gaps within the rich nations themselves. And I kind of noticed as I got in coffee, there was like this cognitive dissonance between all of this really intentional, hyper nerdy curiosity about the most minute detail of a cash crop from other countries, right? Particularly countries that are suffering the effects of colonialism. There's a lot of interest in both helping the farmers who live there and also being very, very curious and attuned to whatever you could learn from this product. But when people brought that product to the countries that they lived in, particularly in the U.S., I noticed that there was just no particular curiosity. Like, that same energy was gone. You know what I mean? Like, there was no more curiosity. There was no more interest. There was no more listening or care for single origin people who have to live in their own neighborhoods. You know what I mean? Who happen to live in their own neighborhoods. There was no interest or curiosity. There was no refractometers being brought out to understand the notes of the neighborhood, right? there were no surveys, you know what I mean? People didn't really take the time to dial anything in. It just kind of was, well, I don't really know about this. I'm not interested in my own aesthetic in particular on top of this. And I feel like what MLK was getting at was that he was trying to address that cognitive dissonance. And I think there's another quote I wanted to share. Let me make sure I got it. Yeah, he addressed that cognitive dissonance because he essentially in the same speech told people that you cannot simply say, well, I don't like the bad things that happen to people of color. It requires an intentionality to be curious and to learn, and in particular, to love. Sorry, I look like that. I'm kind of loud. So I want to read this quote too. It says, we will not build a peaceful world by following a negative path. It's not enough to say we must not wage war, right? Or don't be bad, right? Or don't be racist, right? He said, it's necessary to love peace and sacrifice for it. We must concentrate. We must concentrate not merely on the negative expulsion of war, but the positive affirmation of peace. And I think the positive affirmation of peace within this space requires the intentional pursuit, right? Of understanding the assets, the values, right? The particular flavor notes of the spaces that we occupy, right? And not just in the goods that we purchase in order to sell in those spaces, but in the spaces themselves, the people themselves. And so for us, how does this all kind of relate to a fanny pack? For me, I think aesthetic matters, right? And I think in particular, when we think about, this is something I learned as a teacher, right? That there's a particular cultural value in the communities that I'm from in how you look, and not facial appearance necessarily, but how you present yourself and the aesthetic in which you present yourself. And a lot of that communicates volumes before you ever open your mouth. Like before you even say a word, people are understanding what you are about by how you dress, even if it's unintentional. And I was on TikTok actually, and I was just having a conversation about cultural appropriation and just kind of the disrespect, right? That people walk into other cultures and disregard their particular protocols with. And I was like, some of y'all need to hang out around. It's evident some of y'all didn't grow up around gangs, because you just be disrespecting people's vernacular and the way they dress as if there's no consequence. Sorry about that. As if there's no consequence, right? But how I grew up is that if you don't respect and are not curious about and don't pay attention to how people would like to be spoken to, and in particular, how they dress and what that can communicate, like you could lose your life. And I think I appreciate every single gang, every single GD, every single Crip I grew up around, right? Every Grape Street, every Vice, I appreciate it because perspective. It taught me to value people's culture. It taught me the value that it's worth respecting the way someone wants to be taught. And of course, this over to whether or not you're in a gang at all, but I think this human value, some people, and they never have consequences for disrespecting someone's perspective, their aesthetic. And so I think that when we move into communities of color and we think about coffee shops, right, that one of the interesting things that my mother-in-law told, one of the first places in Memphis where coffee shops, right? They were at these spaces and these places like Woolworths where people would go to get their coffee. And of course, we're not talking about a third wave coffee shop. We're talking about a second wave. We're thinking about diners, right? This is where people went to go get their coffee. And this is where a lot of the de-gentrification, the decolonialization, the resistance happened. Yeah, this is where it happened. And I actually wrote about this in the blog. It's up on the website right now. And I just want to share a little bit, kind of go deeper. You can read it. But one of the things that I thought was interesting is it's a weird irony, right? Where people are seeking to put their life on the line in order to gain dignity in a space, right? Particularly stolen people, people who have been stolen from their continent, from their culture. They're seeking to regain a sense of cultural dignity in a space where being de-identify is being dehumanized. This identity is being taken away. It's just being presented without any type of identity or articulation that was present in its origin, right? And so I felt like that irony is kind of like a double wrong. You know what I mean? It's kind of like a double offense. But they endured that. Like people like MLK, people like my wife's grandfather, Vernon Martin, who this young man is named after, who was a sanitation worker, whose resistance with the sanitation workers in Memphis actually brought MLK down to support the strike they were already doing. A lot of people don't know that, but the strike was already happening, right? It wasn't that MLK came down and brought the resistance to Memphis. Memphis was resisting. Poor black men and women were resisting the... They heard about it and came down to support, which is historically actually the first time that's ever happened. It's the first time where MLK came down to support a movement rather than coming down to start a movement. And it was in this movement that he lost his life. And MLK's primary economic disparities. And we, again, in the quote, he talked, it's not just enough to address the global economic disparities while ignoring the ones in your front door, right? The ones right next to you. Right? The ones that are the present articulation of the foreign evil that you're claiming to fight, right? We got to be consistent. We got to keep that same energy. And so a lot of the things that I think about when I think about coffee shops, again, coffee shops being one of the first places that were integrated forcefully by sit-ins. Again, coffee being the thing that was stolen. Again, even at the Lorraine Motel, there being a coffee shop, a cafe next to where MLK was staying, right? Before he was assassinated. Like, it just sets my imagination on fire. And I think if we really want to honor his legacy, we have to honor his legacy not by just quoting. Thank you, family. I appreciate that. We have to honor his legacy not just by quoting niceties. It's not just enough to share a couple tweets. Like, we need to continue to work. And so when we talk about sacrifice for my wife and I, that's why we moved into the neighborhood we're in. We moved into this neighborhood because we knew, like, if we choose to say we support these actions but don't put any feet right behind that action, we don't make a choice to align our life with the work that aligns with MLK's legacy, particularly like trying to resist economic displacement and disrupt the economic disempowerment that's historical. Like, if we don't do anything to do that, you know what I mean? Hey, you know what it is. This is how he sleeps. He's like, hey, my dad is going to sit up and talk. I was up last night writing this little article, and he was like, yo, fam, it's hilarious. What up, Coffee Plug? What up, Olayinka? Let me know where y'all watching from, too. We live on YouTube, and we live over here on Instagram. But, like, if we're not willing to do that work, we really shouldn't speak as if it's in virtue signal, as if that's what we're about. You know what I mean? Take another sip of this Haitian. God, this joint crazy, bro. Y'all need to get this joint for us going. We just got a new sack in. Y'all going crazy. But yeah, family. So I think that for me, this all kind of comes down to aesthetic, because it's one of the things that I think that gets ignored. And so I want to read a portion of the article that I wrote, or the blog post. It's not an article. But I just read it, and then we can kind of break it down. Your displacement is real out here, especially in Atlanta. And it's crazy because it's so different in every place. It's different in LA. It's different in Atlanta. It's different in New York. It's different in Memphis. And we have to be aligned, right, in communication, so that we can share the ways that these things differentiate and move and evolve and morph. It's like COVID. You know what I mean? I don't know if I can say COVID. I don't want to get demonetized. But it's like, those are things we need to pay attention to, because if we notice that and communicate about how is it affecting different in Latino communities than in Black communities, than even in historically poor white community, right? Come on. One of the things that MLK was touching on was the Poor People's Campaign and the need in like Appalachia and a lot of these rural white communities to have the same type of social justice entity, because for so long, those poor white communities have been tricked to think that some of the policies and the perspective being pushed by people of color were anti them, when in fact, those policies will uplift them just as much, if not more, right? We know that right now, more white people are on welfare and benefit from those systems than black people. I was having a crazy conversation with one of my white homies. It's different in Chicago, right? And these are things we have to communicate about, not to put blanket solutions, but to have blanket movements, right? Blanket momentum that we can collaborate, you know what I mean, and participate within to situate the situation. So one of my friends, right, Seth Baldwin, one of my homies, his name is Seti. He actually lived in this neighborhood too, and he did I guess you could say mentoring work here, mentored a lot of youth here. One of my homies, he's a great artist, white dude, grew up poor and white and rural. And we were talking about this. Like, I grew up Black, and my family was never on welfare. He grew up white, and his parents actually had to be on welfare for a portion of time. But yet the narratives about us in society would say that welfare needs to be in because my family is going to use it too much. When we never used it, right? My family actually of businessmen, preachers, you know, people who ran their own stuff. So we never really were in that position. My family has always had multiple jobs, multiple businesses. But when his family was on that situation, they benefited from it. And yet the narrative that's often pushed onto poor white communities is that it should be eradicated because my family needs it. When family, this is blessing your family right now. Like, this is a help. And I think that Poor People's Campaign and the realization that a lot of our problems are the same, right? The fight to see the similarity between the plight of the poor rural Appalachian family and the poor urban Black family, like, that fight was what MLK was on, right, when he was assassinated. And we got to continue that work. You know what I mean? Like, that's part of why I love our neighborhood, because our neighborhood is poor, but it's diverse. There's black people here. There's Latino people here. There's Vietnamese people here. There's Muslim people here. And there's white people here. A lot of them who are descendants of people who moved here via the GI Bill, which unfortunately black people weren't. Say like, man, we have some interest here and maybe we can use a historically gentrified good to resist gentrification instead of coffee shops being seen as one of the signalers of gentrification. Come on, bro. Servant leader. Come on, bro. My man already know the vibes. He already know the vibes. So I wanted to touch on this whole idea of aesthetic. And then I'm going to hop off of here because my coffee's getting cold. Actually, let me get a little bit more. What y'all brewing on? What up, family? If you're watching on YouTube, I'm sorry I don't see you. I had to click over to see the article. But what's up? What's up? What's up? What's up? Sipping on this Haitian. Yo, that GI Bill nonsense is ridiculous. This is going to be kept up on YouTube, and I'll keep it here, too, so that people can do it. And this is going to be a new show because this is our new podcast setup for the top of the year. I like that. Servant leadership through coffee. Equatorial, what up? Happy broke. What up? Cool, so let me get to that quote. Boom, 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 boom. Like, this is what this bag represents. So why aesthetic? And I think to really get this, you want to, well, I'll just read this, okay? And we can break it down. Got some Harar long. Ooh, yo, them Harars hit different. The Haitian joint, bro. Remember, grime, coarser. Like, it really sings at a coarser grind. Bought a coffee black tea today. Okay, that's what I'm talking about. The team over there bagging up coffee. We're like kind of quarantined because I don't want the baby to get exposed. So we got an amazing team. Shout out to TJ. He just hopped in the chat. Shout out to JC, who's managing the whole anti-gentrification coffee club we're doing in our neighborhood. We got a coffee club. Yeah, family. Come on, bro. Ugh, coffee literally taken from Ethiopia, grown in Brazil, harvested this year. That's crazy, bro. Hey, shout out to that TCE collab. I'm waiting on that joint to come in. But here we go. Let me know if y'all have questions. You know what I mean? But I want to get into this. My headphones are about to die. So let's do it. The quote said, and this is from the article on MLK Coffee Shops and Fanny Packs. It's a new blog we just put up. For the life of me, I can't understand why minimalism and Edison lights are the pervasive aesthetic in coffee shops established smack in the middle of black communities. What's even more confusing is how the owners are bewildered at the lack of neighborhood interest or engagement in said space when the aesthetical aspirations of the neighborhood were never once considered during the shop's conception. Like, fam, don't nobody in the hood aspire to no white walls and light bulbs without lampshades? Don't nobody dream of denim aprons with hella buttons as they sip their morning brews? And they sure don't got no indie alt rock bumping while they ride to work in the morning. The articulation of, and this is the important part, the articulation of a thing matters. It's an art unto itself. Like, think about that articulation. Chris Emden, who's one of our theoretical founders for the movement, he's a educator, critical pedagogue, talks about like critical pedagogy. He's an educator from New York. And when my wife and I, he's kind of like a big part of our educational foundation, which is what we applied to. I'm sorry, I'm not reading anymore. But it's an art into itself. Chris Emden, an urban pedagogue whose research is at the heart of much of our praxis at Coffee Black. Let me read that again. At the heart of much of our praxis at Coffee Black says it pretty well. If you don't have swag, you can't reach someone who looks at swag as social currency. I'm going to say that again. If you don't have swag, you can't reach someone who looks at swag as currency. In our community, dress is currency. Remember when I told y'all about growing up around a bunch of gangs and seeing what you wear and how you speak as like essential life communication? These things are currency. This is what you use to purchase the things you need in life, right? And so if you don't have that, you can't. So people are coming into black and brown communities and they're spending foreign dollars. You see what I'm saying? They're spending a currency that isn't recognized within the nation state of the hoods of America. You feel me? And so if you want to be able to do business or do transactions, right? Build relational transactional relationships. If you want to do that and build capital, social capital, you got to spend the capital that these people use that they recognize. And it's swag. Hence, fanny packs, right? Fanny packs. Hence, like some type of aesthetic. You know, for us, the big inspiration was Off-White, right? In the way, in sneaker culture and streetwear culture is kind of at the heart of our design. And I'm sure people are like, why y'all do so many press? Because like, this is the currency of our community. We don't just do it, right? We become it. We wear it. We hear it. We speak it. We rap it. We sing it. It's a value. It's like hip hop has 5 different pillars, right? B-boying, MCing, DJing, beatboxing. But the 5th one is the one that people forget. It's knowledge. It's as a Christian, it's or a follower of Yeshua, for me, it's the incarnation for me. It's the knowledge with flesh on it for me. Sorry, son, I'm loud. Okay. It's the knowledge with flesh on me, right? It's the embodiment of the truth and not just the acknowledgement of the truth, right? And so that's why for us it's essential that we put things, I'm just gonna keep reading. That's why for us it's essential that as we create these things, we create things that we feel like reflect the currency, the swag, the articulation of the community, and not just the information about the community, right? So why a fanny pack? Fresh, hold up, man. Situation clean, and I tested it too when we was doing the joint. I was like, "Yo, fam, let me show this to one of my homies, right? Who don't care about coffee. He work at the UPS store that we drop all our stuff at down the street from where we at." And I was like, "Fam, yo, what you think about this? Would you rock it?" And this is the essential: when you ask, they rock it. The yes or no, Matt. He was like, "Fam, that joint, I can't eat cap, bro. That joint hard. I rock the mess out that joint." So when you hear people say that. Jarvis, what up, family? We got to connect. Not caffeinated enough. What up? He said, that's your heart. That matters. Because now it says, you have my ear, right? It says that you care enough about the currency that we spend here. Now we can do business. Now we can build relationships. Now we can engage in transactional relationships, right? Oh, that's your 50. It's 50 on the site. We got 100 of them. Now it's probably like, I think it's like 80 or something. 90, 85, I don't know. And I got 2 homies who was like, yo, hold it for the paycheck. So I guess it's 83. But that matters, right? Because if I want him to come in this space and say, hey, let me learn you something, let me teach you something, let me share something with you, then I have to show that I'm willing to share in what matters to them, right? And I believe coffee can matter in our communities, but it's not going to matter if we don't put on the flesh and blood of our communities, right? Yeshua didn't come down and simply say, here's the information about salvation. He put on the articulation of salvation, right? He put on the flesh, the Emmanuel, the God with us, right? Of salvation. And I believe if we're going to do work in communities, it can't just be, that's really what gentrification is. It's just this kind of slathering on of sugar and cream on top of pre-existing notes. Gerald, what up? The homie, the young goat. It's the slathering on of these pre-existing things. It's not the true embodiment. It's not really being dialed in. It's not really getting in touch with the notes and letting those things shine before we even, he ain't saying nothing's wrong with sugar and cream. But before we do that, can we really get to know each other? The identity that's there. You know what I mean? My wife wears makeup all the time. But before I ever think about makeup, I grew to love my wife in her purest, most, you know what I mean? My man said, repeat, it's the embodiment for me. It's the incarnation for me. You know what I mean? So for us, this is kind of incarnational theology. Like, this is us saying, let's put on the flesh and blood and not just use Black products or their cash crops, but let's engage in Black culture. Not single origin cash crops, but single origin cultures. Let me get back to the joint. My man said, repeat that point. If you want me to repeat something, let me miss it. So why a fanny pack? Because it's fresh. Because it contextualizes coffee as a thing that not only has been historically Black, but also could be Black currently, right? And I learned that as an educator. Black history that doesn't recognize or contextualize to the Black present is useless information to transform the Black future. I'm sorry. It's useless information to transform the Black future. I remember walking into the classroom with my students and being like, W.E.B. Du Bois, and they're like, we don't care. And you don't care about us, so why would we care? You don't care enough about us to articulate as us, even though I grew up as us, right? If you don't care enough about us to articulate and put on us, then why would we care enough to listen and put on you, right? Bearing burdens. What's up, Shardy? My wife said we preaching in here. And that was embodied by the Messiah. That was embodied by the Messiah, right? That was embodied by him, him putting on flesh. You know what I mean? Him putting on our burdens. Where is my man on YouTube? What up, YouTube? Wearing my coffee black tea in the office today for MLK. I will rock it. Shout out to Shaniqua. Okay, appreciate you. I want to make sure I'm getting you all's comments. Yeah, shout out to everybody who's watching with us on YouTube right now, too, man. That's what's up. Shout out to everybody on Instagram. I'm going to keep reading. Dang, where I go? Sorry, I got a little mixed up. All right, boom. It places the present. Let me say that again. Okay, because it contextualizes. So why a fanny pack? Because it's fresh. Because it contextualizes coffee as a thing that not only has been historically black, but also could be black currently. And it places that present belonging in the context of a self-determined future. So when we say de-gentrify coffee, it's not only a stylistic proclamation, but it's saying within this stylistic proclamation, we're also going to make a prophetic one and say that we also have a personal intellectual ability to be stylish. But at the heart of hip hop is saying that you can be at the party and be planning your future at the same time. You can be at the party and doing business at the dancing. And we can be speaking ways of freedom and movement. We can be doing hair and planning paths to freedom land, right? Like, these are things that are inherently a part of, to me, the most beautiful parts of black culture. And these are the things that we want to continue to articulate as we reintegrate. On the go, Joe, what up? As we reintegrate with black coffee culture again, right? It's to take that knowledge and say, we're going to take songs and feel hollers and spirituals. And they're going to be a musical innovation. It's going to be a style that's being copied to this day. But I just read an article about how sea shanties, right, were copied from Negro spirituals sang while black people were being transported across the Atlantic. And so people will copy that, but also there's going to be quality content. There's going to be meaning. There's going to be liberation embedded within the style. Right. And that's one of those things why people get upset about, like, the mere aesthetic copying of a style without the more spiritual, meaningful content behind it, because the both and matters. And again, back to the incarnation, being fleshly, aesthetically human, but also having the content of the divine matters. That's where the transformation is. It's the transformation for me. That's where it is. It's really tied up in its aesthetic and divine, spiritual, meaningful, intellectual embodiment. Yeah, we would make a bop out of anything. I remember I used to do bops about paragraphs. we used to do this joint called Aces. Man, I can't remember of it. No, it's Kia. Dang, I can't remember. I had to see if I could find a video where we would like take information and make it stylistic, or you take style and you can go both ways. You can take information and make it stylistic. That's hip hop, right? That's soul. That's beautiful, but that's gospel. But you can also take information. You can take style and make it informational, and find the information within the style, right? So anyway, fanny packs. Back to fanny packs. Because maybe by integrating the globally black culture of coffee with the local black culture in the communities so many coffee shops move into, a kid in said community will feel like coffee could be a space where his imaginative aesthetic could flourish, right? Where it belongs. And that's really what I just want to communicate today, is that as we consider MLK, let us, one, contextualize ourselves in the continued work of MLK, the continued aesthetic of MLK, right? The contextualization. But also to pair that with the actual work, right? And not to try to say I'm gonna do the work, but I'm not gonna contextualize with the people, or to say I'm gonna contextualize with the people, but I'm just gonna be effective, right? I'm gonna be of no effect. But to do both, and I think coffee's a beautiful space to do those things. So yeah, family, that's pretty much what I want to talk about. We got these fanny packs up, and I hope that this encourages you. Please go support a black business today. We got my man TCE, we got Coffee Plug in the building. A lot of black businesses over here, family. So y'all please go support the black coffees in the building. Go support them. You know what I mean? It's a lot of dope stuff popping off. This is gonna be up on YouTube. So you'll have, you know, like the full version of it. Do y'all got any questions before I hop off? They need to see and hear coffee from my narrative. You're right, bro. I'm tired. I feel like I need a towel. Let me sip this Haitian again. was up pretty much all night with this dude and getting the product live and writing. Any questions, put the questions in the chat, yo. Hey, man, I'm glad it was enriching, bro. Let me know if y'all want... Hey, shout out to my mentor and said, we not rocking Edison light bulbs. Nah, I feel you, bro. Edison light bulbs, it's a vibe sometimes. I be feeling the Norwegian aesthetic vibes. It's a vibe. I just think it's not the only vibe. Is that a coffee pitcher? Oh, yeah. So my man, we're working on, I actually shot a video. I haven't posted it yet, but I'm learning how to use the Jebina because I want the Jebina to be a part of us in our anti-gentrification coffee club in the neighborhood. I want to actually make the more, we do first sip for people, kind of pulling from the coffee ceremony, a communal cup, right? And we're open 3 days a day, 3 days a week, just like people brew three times for the Ethiopian ceremony. Trying to pull a lot of inspiration, trying to sample, again, that's hip-hop sampling, and honoring the origin, but recontextualizing it in the present. Honoring the origin of the past, but recontextualizing it in the present. That's hip-hop. But yeah, we have it here. And some of my Aromo friends, my Ethiopian friends are teaching me. So shout out to Muna. Shout out to actually one of the reporters who recently just did an article about the space, the Not a Coffee Shop. He's a Romo. My man Adis at Habasha Grocery down the street. You know what I mean? Shout out to Ephraim at Boom Buna. A lot of people teaching me. So I'm learning now. I just got it. I haven't actually brewed any yet, but I'm learning. Trying to be curious. Yeah, what's up? What's up? Hey, if you're on IG, hop on over to YouTube too and get a video a like. That helps in the algorithm, you know, trying to build out this year, the podcast, trying to build out. If you're listening on, you know, Spotify or wherever you're listening, hop over to YouTube, get edge on the like, share this with people. Different brewing, yeah, and specifically African brewing methods. Like, we brew these African things, but again, we miss the culture behind it. It's like almost we just give me your good, don't talk no more. You know what I mean? It's like the walk of shame. And so, like, I've spent time learning Japanese brewing methods, American brewing methods, British brewing methods, Italian brewing methods. But I haven't actually taken... What up, Twiz? I haven't actually taught myself. And I think that's where I have to decolonize my perspective. I have to de-gentrify my perspective. Like, why have I only been interested and curious about, you know, Western or Asian brewing methods? Not that there's anything wrong with them, but why haven't I taken the brewing methods from the people or learned from the brewing methods from the people who are actually growing the coffee? That's weird. You know what I mean? It's on our website, coffeeblack.com, blogs. You can, you know, the link's in the bio. But yeah, check that joint out, man. I think I still got a couple typos on there because I was up late last night. Most effective value you bring to your coffee and culture. I think for me, it's just the idea that there should be, there's not a wall. Oh, somebody just bought a fanny pack. Shout out to whoever just caught that. Yo, fam, that's dope. I would love to hear too, like, what are some things y'all took away from this? Because I'm gonna have to chop this YouTube video down to a couple different videos. And it'd be helpful to know which part's connected. Yeah, fam. And I think too, like, it's just the idea that we'll take your cash crops, but not your culture. Or we'll take your culture, but we don't want your creativity. You know, we'll take your products, but not your perspective. Or any other alliterated way we can make that point. And it happens, right? Like, people want the hip-hop sound, but they don't want the hip-hop society. You know, and it's disrespectful to... And again, I use the example because I think it's an easy way. It kind of takes a lot of the... I went to a Korean church for 4 years in school, right? Or 4 years when I was in college. When I went to that college, I learned some Korean words. Now, do I go around starting my business saying I'm Korean? No. But do I use those words when I'm around Korean people? Yes. But do I, and even when I do that, I do it with trepidation because I don't want to come across disrespectful. And some people don't want to hear my terrible pronunciation. So there's an amount of respect, and I love Korean culture. I value it. You know what I mean? And I've had negative experiences in the culture too, but that doesn't cause me to discount the whole culture. I still appreciate the beautiful things guys articulated within that space, and I love learning more. But there's an amount of respect to let me say, man, let me take this the way you're telling. Let me ask you how I should approach this because I believe you know best. And a lot of times Black people don't get that. You know what I mean? You don't get that same respect. People just take your culture and keep on running. Like, it's like you're still a slave. Like, you're not a person, right? And I just think that's weird. It's my dream to open a coffee shop within my community. Come on, fam, us too. We just kind of opened up this Not a Coffee Shop concept, but I'm not an expert. We're still figuring it out. I'm trying to figure out what it would look like to do it in that, from a more African perspective, and to sample that and contextualize that with the culture we already have in our community, you know, and make coffee make sense within that instead of putting something else on it. Within my community is the only gourmet shop is the other side. Yep. And then when they do come on our side of town, they don't look like us. They don't want to look like us. They don't talk like us. They don't hire. My man Twiz talked about this. This is going to come on the anti-gentrification coffee shop page, but they don't hire from our community. You know what I mean? You're not hiring us. You're hiring other people. You don't want people. Like, one of the things, so our not a coffee shop is located on a street where there's a lot of displaced people who walk. It's very walkable, right? So people who are homeless, people who are mentally divergent, people who live in, like, I guess you could say boarding homes, people who are kind of, like, you know, alone. It's important for us to go out of our way to speak to people. Hey, how you doing, Mr. George? Hey, man, you want to come in and grab a seat? Now, it's quarantine, so you can't stay for long. But you know what I mean? Like, it's important to go out of your way to build those relationships, whereas I've seen so many shops, they just call the police on folks. It's like, he was here before you. She lived here before you knew this neighborhood existed for cheap real estate in an urban aesthetic. You know what I mean? Like, yes, fam. That's what I'm saying. The fanny pack's on the site, coffeeblack.com. You can go grab them. We got a couple left. Respect this is the name of the game. Yeah, it's not about saying one's better than the other, or sometimes I get this weird thing of people like, you think black culture is the best. I'm like, nah, I just think it's dope like any other culture is dope. That's like saying you think Ethiopian coffee. Well, first of all, I mean, we're gonna be honest, it's the origin. So any coffee is a derivative from that. It could be a dope derivative, but you gotta honor the origin. I mean, maybe it's the hip-hop in me, but I mean, you got to show respect. That's just respect. You know what I mean? But again, I think some people, it shows some folks didn't grow up around gang culture. I was never in a gang, but I learned enough to, like, respect is important. But I think that, you know, it's not to say that one origin is better than the other, because my second favorite origin, the next one right after Guji's from Ethiopia, is Microlot Colombians, right? It's not saying one is better than the other. It's saying let's give each one the respect they deserve to truly articulate the notes and the beauty. And that's the same thing for people. You know, shout out to somebody just ordered something from the website too, man. Appreciate y'all supporting. This is our business. We don't have any creditors. You know what I mean? We just do this from the hustle, from the love of it. So any support really matters. Let me plug up my computer. What's up, little man?
Coffee stay black, just like me. Don't need no sugar, don't need no cream. Coffee stay black, just like me.
Hey, yo, so check it. By popular request, Coffee Black presents our first ever coffee subscription program, the Brew Culture Subscription Box. We've gained so much positive feedback and interest from our growing community for our Guji Mane blend that we've sought to bring you a monthly subscription via our website. So what does that mean for you? One, mad money savings, yo. For $35, you'll receive two 12-ounce bags that can make up to 40 pour-overs. That's 90 cents a cup. Compare that to your local Starbucks price. Two, inside perks. You'll be first in line for our newest and latest releases, including monthly admittance to the private brew-ups, our monthly coffee ciphers happening in our private Facebook group. Three, you'll be supporting a Black-owned business that continues to seek to build up the Black community in Memphis and worldwide through reclaiming Black coffee culture.